The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to another episode of the Mediocre Movie Podcast. I am Drew, your host. This is another installment of Better Know a Mediocre Movie Club member. My guest at this moment is one of the best writers of the Mediocre Movie Club when it comes to reviews. It's like every single one that he writes should be review of the year. With no further ado, coming straight out of Tennessee, Lane, say hey.
Hey, thank you very much, sir. It is a pleasure to be with you this evening.
Well, the pleasure's mine. It's an honor. I'm glad you're able to join me tonight. So.
Absolutely.
All right. One thing that we always like to do here on Better Know a Mediocre Movie Club member, I got to come up with a better name than that, but that's neither here nor there.
I don't know. It's pretty good. Yeah.
Okay. is, you know, we're here to better know you. And so you're one of the newer members.
Yep.
Why don't you go ahead and just introduce yourself, you know, how you knew the Mediocre Movie Club, what's your background, what got you in it. Go right ahead.
Yeah, so I think I'm the second newest member. I've been in the club for it's going on 2 years, I think, now. Mm-hmm. And have watched some really good movies, have watched some really terrible movies. some movies that I never would have watched otherwise. But it's been really cool, and I have an in-person relationship with a couple of the Mediocre Club members, Shane and Blair specifically. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how I got connected. But a lot of, you know, I was thinking about it the other day, a lot of the folks in the club I've never met in person.
Right.
So love to make that happen at some point.
Absolutely. I mean, when, you know, some of us went to college together and, so whenever they say Mediocre Movie Club South, you know, in, you know, it's always like Georgia. So
yeah,
they tend to forget.
And one outpost in Nashville, which is where I'm at. I live in Nashville. And I think that's about it. So,
well, there's another one out in Arizona. And,
right.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so they kind of forget that South is not just the Southeast anymore, but that's neither here nor there anyway. But now rumor has it, and to steal a phrase from another podcast, rumor and innuendo is that Mediocre Movie Club member Shane would brag to you about being in the Mediocre Movie Club and what they'd write and all that sort of stuff. Do you mind to speak to that?
I have this one story. I went out to dinner one time with Shane and another friend or two, and I think he thought I was in the club for some reason, and he went, "Oh yeah, have you seen the movie we're watching yet?" And I like wasn't quite sure what he was talking about, so I just played along, and I was like, "No, I haven't seen it yet. What's going on?" And he started to brag to me about how great it was, and I don't even remember what movie it was at this time, and then like 10 minutes later, and if you know Shane, he does this thing where he goes, "Oh, wait a minute, you're not in the club."
Yeah.
And I went, "Oh, no, I'm not yet. I didn't." So
Joke's
that's
on
when
you.
I was, yeah, that's when I was so excited. Like, you know, 2 years later, he like invited me to, he said I'd gotten the nomination to be in it. So I was really stoked about it.
Oh, that's hilarious. So, so now how did you get to know Shane and Blair, and then which led to you being part of the club? Now you worked with Mediocre Movie Club member Blair, is
yeah,
that right?
Yeah, very. So I think our movie club is the most interesting in the country because we have a strong contingent of both people who do not believe in God at all and those who have committed their lives to serve in the church. And I'm one of those. So I'm a pastor. That's my vocation, as is Blair. And so I met Mediocre Movie Club member Blair because we served in churches in Atlanta at the same time, and got to be friends with her and then with Shane. And so we're really close to them when I lived there for 5 years or so. So that's kind of how that connection happened.
Awesome. Let's just do just a little bit of background about yourself. You grew up in the South, correct?
Like, yeah, that's right.
In the Southeast.
I am from Alabama originally. My family still lives there, so that's where I go and spend my holidays. I've spent a couple of years out of the South. I went to grad school up in New England and was there for a few years, but have spent most of my life in the South.
Now, you sound nothing like a Southerner. Where's that Southern drawl?
I get that all the time, and I've come – like for most of my young adult life, I was like, well, thank God. And now I've started to get to the age – like I'm getting a little older, and I'm like, I really want to connect with my roots. I really want to get back to that because all my friends just have that drawl, and well, that sounds really dignified or something like that. So I don't know. But normally I have a very neutral Midwestern accent. Yes. I don't know where it came from because my parents are from the South. I mean, my whole family is from the South, so I have no idea why I didn't get that. It just that's the way it happened.
Now, are you Roll Tide?
No, I am an Auburn fan, War Eagle.
And, oh boy, okay.
And I am going to the Iron Bowl in 2 weeks. I'm so excited. Oh, so it is.
That is.
Yeah,
awesome.
I'm going to be there. It's going to be fantastic. So.
Okay. Well, War Eagle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me just ask you here. Do you remember, you know, getting into some of your movie experience? Because that's what we really do here at the MMC. We love to talk about movies and all the other aspects about it and get into the controversial things. But a very basic thing is, what is your first movie experience, like inside a movie theater? Do you remember what that was?
Yeah, so like I said, I grew up in Alabama. I grew up in a very small town, like several small towns. Mm-hmm. And the small town that I grew up in for most of my like young life was a town called Tallahassee, Alabama, which is right between Montgomery and Auburn, if you know your Alabama geography. But anyway, there is no movie theater there. So it's a town of – when I was there, probably 3,000-4,000 people at the most. And so we would always – to go to the movie, we'd have to drive into Montgomery. That was the closest big city that had a movie theater.
Okay.
And so I remember when I was like 6 or 7, probably driving in to see Snow White. I'm pretty sure that was like the mid-80s and the re-release of that movie, the first time it had been in theaters in like whatever 40 years or something. Yeah. And I remember my dad taking me to go and see that. Out in East Montgomery. So yeah, that's like the very specific first movie reference I ever had.
Do you remember if you enjoyed the movie?
I have no idea. I think it was probably fine. I mean, like most kids who grew up in the 80s and 90s, like my real viewing experiences were shaped by the television, not the movie screen.
Yeah.
I think like my generation was probably the first. So I'm kind of a little post Generation X, but like not quite a millennial. And that my generation was probably the first that like our viewing experiences were not shaped by the big screen. It was shaped by the small screen. And so I had to go back later when I was in college and sort of learn how to love what happens on the big screen. And I think most people probably my age would have similar experiences too.
What movie made you want to go, oh, wow? Like that's just was a big turning point for you.
So the one that I was going back and thinking about, so I think I went and saw Hook like 6 times in the theater.
Really?
Do you remember Hook?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I don't. I mean, it's I think I don't know if I've seen it in a long time now, but like at the time, for some reason, there was just something about that movie that just like captured my imagination. So anytime a friend was like, "Oh, I haven't seen Hook. Well, we're going today. Let's go see Hook." But the one that I know like really made a big impact on me was Jurassic Park, which I saw when I was 15 years old. And I had the story behind that is I had broken my foot on the last day of school playing kickball before the summer, right?
Oh, no.
So the last day of school before the summer, I'd broken my foot, which meant I had a cast all summer, couldn't go outside, you know, couldn't do anything outside.
No.
And so I basically just stayed inside all summer and got really fat and I read books, and one of the ones that somebody got me was Jurassic Park, and it just so happened that the movie came out that same summer. Mm-hmm. And so I was just like, I was a nerd for dinosaurs that summer. It was awesome. But I just remember that movie theater experience It was the first time I'd ever seen a movie in like the THX sound. Do you remember that?
Oh,
when
my
that
gosh.
Was like the big THX, yeah. Like digital sound. We were like, what's digital sound? We have no idea. and the dinosaurs, they sounded so real. And so that was kind of the first movie that I remember walking out of the theater and my heart was just beating out of my chest because I, you know, wasn't sure what was going to happen at the end.
Yeah.
Just an amazing, amazing movie. Still to this day, I still will turn that on if it is just ever, you know, on cable or whatever and watch a little bit of it.
Awesome. Now, is there, let me pose this in a way. Whenever I see anything, because I'm born and raised in Indiana, and anytime I see anything in the media, like whether it's on the silver screen or the small screen or anything that has to do with Indiana, it's like it's trashing it in some way or making snide remarks about it, and it kind of bothers me a little bit.
Sure.
Is there anything that you've seen about the South, about what you do for a living, being a pastor, that you've had like in the media? Like, well, let me be more specific. In movies that you're just like, oh no, or anything that we've discussed in a review where you're just like, oh man, what in the world?
It's weird. I think there would have been a time in my life when I was really defensive about like, oh, you're getting the characterization of the South wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, as I've grown older and I've sort of seen the ridiculousness and the hypocrisy that happens in the South, I'm like, no, that's probably right. Yeah, you're and especially, you know, whenever you're listening to this, I mean, obviously we're in the middle of this ridiculous Roy Moore crap with the Senate thing. And the weird thing about that is I'm going, oh, yeah, I probably know like four or five people who dated teenagers when they were in their 30s. Like, that's not a weird – that was not a weird thing in Alabama necessarily, but it's not right. Like, it's not cool. Nobody should have been doing that. But at the time, that was just – I don't know. People did that. And so anyway, like, I guess – so when I lived in New England – people would sometimes ask me like, oh, what was it like to grow up in Alabama? Like, you know, like it was some, you know, remote island somewhere or something. And I mean, it's not, honestly, first off, there are rednecks everywhere. So it doesn't matter what state you live in, you got rednecks there.
No question.
It doesn't, that's not unique to any state. Mm-hmm. But I used to tell people, actually the thing you should watch, this was the television show I'd point them to, is Friday Night Lights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The NBC television show. I don't know if you ever watched it, but that show captures what it is like to live in the South. And I know that one's set in Texas, but so much of it could just transplant right to Alabama. Like the football culture, the hierarchy, you got some kids who are gunners and some who are just losers. And I mean, that is probably the best artistic expression of what it is probably like to live in the South. And I bet a lot of Midwestern states and other places too, but
sure.
So it's not a movie necessarily, and I mean, and I for some reason I kind of think about like what movies characterize the South the best.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I'll actually mention one. So one of my favorite movies of this past year has been Baby Driver.
Okay.
Have you seen Baby Driver yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So I mean, I think probably a lot of MMC members would disagree with me on whether or not that's a good movie.
Mm.
But it is this really interesting mix of like a crime thriller and a car chase movie. And it's like this love letter to the city of Atlanta at the same time, which I lived in for 6 years. And so like for me, it's just like this really kind of sentimental, but in a good way, movie that kind of gets a little bit of what it is like to live in the modern South. And the modern South is very different than like Gone with the Wind and that crap.
Okay.
So I would recommend that to folks. You may not like the movie. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was just a fun summer movie that had some really interesting things to say about just modern Southern spaces.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Great. I remember, MMC member Shane talking about how 999 was terrible, even though it was filmed in Atlanta. And
Well, there are a lot of movies filmed in Atlanta. Georgia has one of the best movie tax credits of any state, ironically. So, like, I actually knew a guy he was like a teacher on the MTV show Teen Wolf. And like, we used to have these like long conversations about what it was like to like, that was his full-time job. He was an actor and all of these things. But yeah, Atlanta has like a lot of actors and things like that. So it's actually a cool movie town these days. If you know the right people and like are in the right places, but yeah, I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean all the movies are good. A lot of them are terrible.
Let's talk about some of your favorites that you've had. I think it was Phil, Mediocre Movie Club member Phil, who once stated that as we get older throughout time, our tastes will change. So what was good for you when you were like 14 will be different when you're 22. And so do you have like a time when you were like in your late teens, early 20s, that high school, college transition that might have been a like your favorite movie at that time period?
I disagree with MMC member Phil a bit because my tastes at 14 were awesome. So I don't know what he's talking about.
Just
kidding. So I had some pretty bad taste in a lot of things when I was 14, including music and all that. Yeah. I was lucky in that I sort of – I don't know why this was the case necessarily, but I decided when I was in high school that I wanted to educate myself on film.
Okay.
And I think – I moved around a lot when I was in high school. Like we moved town, so it's probably just a manifestation of sort of being a bit of a loner, a bit of a lonely teenager, yeah, and kind of having that that thing when I was growing up. But
I'm with you.
But when I was 16 or 17, I just said, you know what, I'm gonna watch all of the AFI top 100 films. That I can. And so that was kind of the one list that I knew about at the time. And I know there are better ones out there, but so I just started, like, I went to the local Blockbuster, in Dothan, Alabama. That was where I lived, southeast corner, of the state. And I got the Blockbuster membership and you could rent movies during the week for $1.
Oh my God.
And VHS tape. I had a VHS, you know, thing in my room. And I just rented anything they had that was in the top, was in the AFI top 100. And I wouldn't necessarily say like I like understood all those movies. I just kind of absorbed them during that time. And that was a really, you know, pretty formative thing. So like, I mean, I'd watch like Citizen Kane. I could watch Citizen Kane now and have a much more technical definition of what, or, you know, Orson Welles was doing. But at the time, yeah, it was just sort of an immersion in film. And it was really when I kind of learned to love movies, because I didn't, like I said, I grew up in a small town. We didn't have a movie theater. I didn't grow up going to the movies all the time. It was kind of a special occasion. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, when I was a teenager, probably my like guilty pleasure movies are like spoof movies. So like, I'm trying to think, what was the one where, Charlie Sheen was in it, and it was like the Top Gun spoof movies. I can't even remember what they were. You remember those?
Yeah,
I can't
remember
what they're called now, but like I loved those when I was a kid. Hot shots. That was it.
Was
yes.
that it? Yeah. Okay.
That was it. I just, and so I do have these like really awesome memories of my dad just taking me to go see those spoof movies whenever they were in the theater, because he was cheesy too, and so we would just die laughing. But he also took me to like some actually really good movies too when I was actually got me into like rated R movies and stuff when I was like 14. So my dad was pretty cool like that, but but yeah, that's kind of, I don't know. Like my tastes have certainly changed over the years. I would actually say that these days I prefer the sort of bigger, like more entertaining movie over the smaller artistic movie, where that was not necessary. So let me think. Baby Driver is a great example. Like that's okay. There's nothing necessarily super innovative or just revolutionary about that. But it's just a really cool big summer fun movie. For last year, my favorite movie last year, or my two favorite ones, were probably Arrival, which I loved because it was just this huge, expansive science fiction. It had a great storyline, no doubt about it, but it just the movie itself was just big. That was a movie that you could not have done on a small screen. Like, okay. You could not have done it as a TV show. Okay. And the other one was La La Land. I mean, I don't know, maybe cheesy that like a musical was my favorite, but I love that movie. It was so good. And like, I just love those characters. And it was something you could not have done as a TV series. And I think that's like, to me, that's the most interesting sort of entertainment debate these days is like, what would be a good TV show and what would be a good movie? And I think people mistake that a lot of times. And I think we have a lot of movies that actually would be better as TV shows. And we have a lot of TV shows that would be so awesome. It's just like two and a half hour big screen things.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay. What do you think it would be if you were like flipping around on a Saturday or a middle of the week type thing, and there's, you know, you come to like Spike or TNT or something like that, and they're like having one, you know, this movie marathon of like maybe Die Hard or something. What would be like if you're flipping around and you see a movie, like, oh, okay, I could do that. Like, or what would be like that movie that you'd be able to stop and just kind of watch without having any kind of problem with it?
Well, Die Hard's a great example, which I think it is a Christmas movie. I don't know if anybody. Yeah, I think it's a Christmas movie and it's an action movie. It's everything. Die Hard is awesome. So I will go with I am a huge fan of the horror genre.
Okay.
And I will stop on most any horror movie unless it's just a really, really terrible horror movie. And even at that case, like, I'll give it a chance because sometimes the worst horror movies are the best. You know what I mean? Like, the really B movies can be really entertaining. So if I'm just flipping around, like, a lot of times if I've got a day off on, you know, Saturday or Friday or whatever my day off is, I'll just go to HBO and just say, okay, what new horror movies, you know, do they have on? I think I've seen all of the Annabelle movies or whatever. They're not great, but like they do make you like sit on the edge of your seat. I do get a little scared when I watch them. So I mean, I don't know. I love horror movies, and I have really since I was a teenager too. I've always loved those. So those are kind of my go-to.
Do you have a favorite one? Is it The Exorcist by default or?
The Exorcist, I think, is the best horror movie, and I would place it in the top three movies of all time that I've ever seen.
Okay.
I love Exorcist. I'm not necessarily into, like, the gory horror movies. Like, I did really enjoy the first Saw movie because it was just really unique and, like, it was just different.
Yeah.
Now, Saw 2 through 17 or whatever, that's not my thing. I don't like torture porn just for the sake of watching it. It's not necessarily – I'm not necessarily into that. But like, if it is a unique storyline, if there's something different going on, and horror really gives, like, I think directors a chance to try new things, like to really stretch – boundaries of what the audience will accept. And so I think a lot of the innovation that we've seen in film in the last 30 years usually starts in horror movies. Jaws is a perfect example, right? Like Spielberg creates this movie about sharks and it just people line up out the door to see it. And so it expands the universe of what people will go and see. So, yeah, and I don't know. There's just always something about being scared. I love it.
So where do you put The Shining?
So The Shining, you know, The Shining is an interesting, really interesting case for a horror movie because Stephen King hated it. He really did not like it because it diverged so much from the book. And if you read the book, and I read the book a long time ago, and I mean – it is very different. Like, it's a different story. Kubrick is doing something completely different. I will say, like, The Shining for me is certainly a top 10, probably a top 5 horror movie. I don't necessarily go as far as others do and saying it's like the best thing ever or something like that. I mean, I think there are better ones. I don't know. Kubrick's an interesting dude just in so many ways because he just sort of could do any genre, and a few of his movies might be considered the best of the genre. I'm not sure The Shining is necessarily up there, but it's close.
Right.
Okay.
Have you seen The Blair Witch Project?
Oh, man, dude. I believed The Blair Witch Project for a little while. I was in high school when The Blair Witch Project came out.
Yeah.
And I remember reading things about this found footage, and it's going to be – and I was like, oh, my God, this is awesome. Now, I did find out before I went and saw it that it was not real, but I loved the original Blair Witch, and I don't care. People can give it – people can pan it today, but I'm going to tell you what, Blair Witch is the truth, y'all. That is awesome because of – and you just – if you did not experience the atmosphere around that movie, you are not experiencing that movie.
You're because exactly right.
That was the very first time – that there was like fake news, right, around the movie. Nobody knew exactly what was true. Maybe this is real. We don't know, you know. And it came out pretty quick, but I just think that is so cool that they could manufacture something like that to go with that movie. So I'm all for the Blair Witch. I love it.
You know, when I saw something like a little documentary or something done on that, or maybe it was a side story or something along those lines where – they had a state trooper like come out every weekend and with a bullhorn and tell them there is no Blair Witch, go home.
But, you know, like that's the thing I love about film though. Like, and I think there are only really two artistic mediums that can do this. And that's books and film.
Yeah.
That like can create this whole alternate universe. Yeah. Right. And film doesn't do it that much anymore. Blair Witch, maybe kind of one of the last examples of that. I'd have to think about it to think if there are others. But I mean, you know, you think about like Harry Potter and some of the other just like phenomena. I mean, those things just don't happen that much anymore. And there are really only two mediums that can happen in, and that's books and film. I don't know. Maybe the internet's doing that a little bit in some weird way.
Perhaps that's a good point. And I know we're kind of diverging here, which is fine. But one last thing I want to say about that is that another, you know, to add on to what you said is that when I was doing my graduate work, I was in Rhode Island, and of course, you know, New England is rather compact. And so I'm like, dude, I'm out here in New England. I got to see the John Adams stuff. So I go up there and I figured it would be packed or something, and I would ask people. So is this thing like you should have been here? Well, you know, in that New England accent, you should have been here whenever, you know.
Yeah, right.
And when the miniseries took place, I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He goes, "There were people crawling all over the place when that John Adams miniseries."
Oh, right. Yeah.
So. It's very, you know, I couldn't agree more with you. I mean, books and movies really add to tourism and all these other particular things that go on there. I mean, so anyway.
Somebody needs to make a movie about Walden Pond. That would be the most boring movie ever. I went out in the woods and just I gave everything away. Yeah. Gosh. The worst New England movie ever.
Yeah. Oh, that would be so fantastic if somebody did that. Oh my gosh. It made me happy to make this movie. In your spirit, David Thoreau. So,
oh man.
Anyway, so you said that The Exorcist is probably in your top 3. What would be number 1? Do you have a number 2 favorite?
Oh, so up there, certainly the Godfather movies.
Oh, yeah.
1 and 2. I almost really rank them as like the same movie. They were made years apart, but it really is kind of a one long 6-hour sort of movie. And, That one I watched when I was a teenager without my parents' permission or knowledge, and just fell in love with that world, the whole gangster world. And to this day, I will watch most gangster movies that come out. I will read a lot of Dennis Lehane books and just anything that, like, you know, in that world of the gangster mobster sort of thing. It's fascinating to me. So that movie, I think, is right up there. It would be really hard to, you know, I didn't really give it a lot of thought in terms of like what my 1, 2, and 3 would be. Exorcist is totally up there.
Right.
I don't know. That I'd have to sort of think about it a little more. But
are you a Star Wars fan? Do you enjoy the new? You know,
that's an interesting question, because I grew up on Star Wars. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I had the first Star Wars I remember loving actually was Empire Strikes Back.
Oh yeah.
And I had that on VHS and used to rewatch that all the time. I don't remember ever loving the first Star Wars all that much. But I also watched the third one. What was the third one called?
Return of the Jedi.
Return of the Jedi, of course. You're right. Yes. Return of the Jedi. And, you know, like, those movies were out when I was like 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. And so, I mean, that was certainly a part of the culture. I was as much of a Star Wars fan as any other kid of my era, but I am not the like diehard fanatic these days for it. I will absolutely go see The Last Jedi when it comes out, but I will probably wait 2 or 3 weeks, you know, before I see it. I mean, I will not be there in costume on, you know, the night that it comes out. And if you're into that, that is totally cool. I'm good with that. Like, I love it. Great. World creation. That is what I am for, fiction. But it's just not necessarily my thing. And it's not like I love Star Trek either. Actually, really, I never really like got into Star Trek.
Yeah,
it wasn't my thing. No. But I actually am really curious about the Han Solo movie, though.
I think
there's been a lot of controversy because that was Han Solo was certainly my favorite character out of all of the four characters. So I'll be interested to see how that goes.
Oh, yeah, I think so too. I don't know what to really expect from it, to be honest, but knowing more about his backstory is definitely going to be of interest. But
you do have to think with these Star Wars movies, like, they have just been hitting them out of the park.
Absolutely. Long,
except for the George Lucas prequels, which were all pretty terrible.
Yeah.
But like, every other one, they've just been hitting out of the park. Eventually, they have to have a dud, right? I mean, which one is going to be the one that everybody's like, whoa, that would suck. Well, I don't know. I hope it's not the Han Solo, so we'll see.
I hope it's not either. I mean, I really enjoyed Rogue One. There's some controversy with that in the MMC.
I did 42. I thought it was good.
I did too. I thought it was great. Maybe it's my bias because I love Star Wars, but, you know, it's whatever. But, you know, I don't know. But, and others, you know, didn't really like Episode 7 all that much, and I'm going, what are you guys? I don't know, but anyway,
just take a swim somewhere. Yeah. Go swim in a cold lake, like, whatever. Enjoy it. We're not gonna have Star Wars forever. Just enjoy it,
exactly.
You know. But at some point, there is gonna be one that is just universally everybody goes, well, that was terrible. But maybe those were the George Lucas ones, Episodes 1, 2, 3.
I'm hoping that's what they are, because I just
maybe,
you know. I just sigh every time I see them. I'm like, man.
Yeah, they're pretty bad. I did go and see – I remember seeing at least Episodes 1 and 2 in the theater, and it was just sort of like, huh, okay, all right, yeah.
Yeah, that's how I felt too. I mean, I immediately left from high school to go stand in line for 4 to 5 to 6 hours in May to watch Episode 1.
Yeah,
and I was, you know, we had our tickets, we were ready, and then like we saw it, and I was like, oh well.
Yeah.
Anyway, but
we lament.
I know. So, do you have a favorite actor? Do you have a favorite actress? Is there one where you just say, hey, you know, if that one's in it, I have to go see it.
I will say that I sort of fall into the category of MMC movie club member John, in that I don't necessarily go see movies because of actors or who's in them. I'm much more interested in directors.
Okay.
But I do appreciate the work that actors and actresses do in the movie. I mean, the couple of people that sort of jump to mind for me, I think Ryan Gosling is like an excellent actor these days.
Well, yeah, he saved jazz.
Well, of course he did.
as he said in his SNL monologue, you know.
Yeah, so like that, yeah, he saves jazz and he's pretty good in all the other movies that he's in. Like, why wouldn't you go see that? The one controversial actor that I defend these days, and other people will generally mock me for, but I love James Franco.
Okay.
So I bring James Franco up in conversations as much as I can. So the dude, I think he is so much smarter than he lets on. And he kind of he does like a lot of roles that you definitely wouldn't respect, you know, necessarily, sort of like lowball comedy kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But then every once in a while, he'll like come out and he'll do like a Milk. Or he'll do like he'll just be in something that you go, oh wow, I didn't know that guy could do that necessarily. Yeah, and I've been watching The Deuce on HBO, which is like one of the grittiest shows I've ever seen on HBO, and that's saying a lot.
Okay.
Because they have some crazy gritty shows.
Yes,
so
The Deuce is like
really grinding down in the nitty gritty, but he's really good in it. I think he's great in the Deuce. And so I just think he's one of those actors that is kind of surprise you in what he can do, but he just ends up doing what he enjoys, which sometimes is just like stupid comedies, and that's cool. Like, man, if I could do that for a living, I'd do it too. So I don't begrudge him that. It's awesome.
Okay.
Like actresses, I would go with like Jennifer Lawrence. I think is always good in almost everything she does. And I will give a defense for Kristen Stewart, who I think gets a bad rap because of the Twilight movies.
Yeah.
But she has done some really interesting stuff.
Okay.
And obviously I'm not judging this on the way they look. I've never even noticed how they look. They're just normal people to me. I'm only judging on their acting abilities. I think they're both awesome. So,
can we get you to say that under oath? You played the fifth.
Maybe.
I haven't noticed Kristen Stewart doing anything since Twilight, but maybe she's done.
Some like small indie stuff that I don't know. I read a review of one of her like indie movies. So there's a director. Hang on, I got to look through my notes because I wrote his name down. Olivier Assayas. I'm not sure how you say it exactly. Anyway, he's done like two movies with her. They're very artsy-fartsy types of movies. But she is good. And I read one review of one of the movies, and I thought, oh, wow, this captures what Kristen Stewart does. When she is on screen, your eyes are on her.
Mm.
And to me, that is like a perfect example of what a good actor or actress should do. Like if you are the star of that movie, everybody's eyes should be on you. And she does that. And so, yeah. So, like, I've just kind of noticed that about a lot of her movies. So I'm for that. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not a fan of the Twilight movies. I'll just say I saw one of them. Okay, I saw two of them.
Yeah,
but
me too.
I'm not a fan. Yeah, I'm not a fan. That's not my thing. But, like, I do think she's more talented than people give her credit for.
Okay. Can you defend the new Jennifer Lawrence movie? Was it called Mom?
I haven't seen it.
Okay.
Mother. Oh, you're
Mother.
Talking about Mother.
Yeah, that's it.
I haven't seen it yet. Okay. No, I meant to go see it. So I won't try and defend it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's very fair. All right. So who would be, since you know you're big on the directors, do you have a favorite director where you're like, okay, he made it, I have to go watch it?
So, yeah, good question. I would say, anything that comes out by like Christopher Nolan, I'm going to go see.
Okay.
I really enjoyed Dunkirk this past year.
Yeah.
I thought it was a great movie. Yeah. Anything that comes out from Steven Spielberg, I'm going to go see.
Okay.
I will say one of my, a couple of my favorite directors, Scorsese.
Oh, right.
Obviously.
Yeah.
So that's going to, I'm going to go see that immediately. So Cary Fukunaga, I think is how you say his name. We watched his movie, MMC movie, Beast of No Nation, which is a Netflix thing.
That's right.
I've loved everything he's ever done. So, And I think he's got some upcoming projects I'm super excited about. And I will throw a defense out for another director that probably a lot of MMC movie members would not agree is great. But I always love Judd Apatow movies.
Really?
Yeah, I do. There's just something like primal and hilarious about those movies that if Judd Apatow makes a movie, I will absolutely go see it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've seen things like Pineapple Express and the 40-Year-Old Virgin and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Every single one of them.
Okay.
In fact, if there was like a – to go back to a previous question, like a go-to movie that I could like – if I'm just watching, it would be This is the End.
Oh, and, man.
It's just not a Judd Apatow movie necessarily, but like it's all the Judd Apatow characters. I loved This is the End. I make all of my friends watch this. I own it. I will absolutely watch it on repeat over and over again. So I love that movie.
Oh, man. Okay. we're going to have to disagree on that, but that's okay. We'll come back
that's
to that
fine.
At some other moment.
So
let's talk about your movie experience. Do you have like a story that was like, this is the funniest thing that's ever happened while I've been in the movie theater?
I do, and it has nothing to do with the movie. So
okay. Good.
Yeah, so this is an experience that happened when I first started working in the church world. I worked mostly with teenagers.
Okay.
And I was a youth director, and so I would do a lot of different trips and events and things with our group's teenagers. And I took one group 1 year for a mission trip overseas to Puerto Rico. So still American territory, but we went to Ponce, which is a city on the south side of Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. But we got like one or two nights of like freedom. We could go doing whatever we wanted. And I had about 30 kids that were sort of under my charge at the time. And so I thought to myself, what am I going to do with 30 teenagers in Puerto Rico? I can't do anything I'd want to do. So we have to go do something they would want to do. So we're going to go see a movie. And we found a movie theater somewhere about an hour north of the city we were staying in. And I went to buy tickets, and like they show movies in Spanish only or in Spanish with English subtitles. And I wasn't quite sure what movie I was buying a ticket to. So I was buying a ticket for 30 people. They only took cash, but the movie was only $3. You can go see a new release in Puerto Rico for $3. So it was pretty cheap. So I bought the ticket. Thank God it was Spanish with English subtitles so we could understand it. And it was like Ice Age 4. I very distinctly remember Ice Age 4. And we were in Ice Age 4. We were watching this movie that was completely in Spanish with English subtitles.
Oh my God.
And only later did I learn that like several of our teenagers like totally checked out and were just like making out in the back of that theater during the time, which we later confronted them on, and you know, we're basically asked them, hey, what was your favorite part of the trip? And you know, when they would say like, oh, we were serving the poor, we would be like, oh yeah, because I think it was Ice Age 4. I think that was your favorite part of the trip. So it was kind of, I don't know, probably scarred the kids for life, whatever. I'm sure they're fine. That's like that is the most memorable theater experience I have ever had in my life,
oh my
for sure.
Goodness. Oh my goodness. Is there one where it was just like the worst? Like you were there to watch a movie and it just turned out to be like this whole experience was just terrible for you?
You know, I am a super picky movie theater person these days. I think it's just my age and stage of life. Like, anything that is not theater seating is the worst experience I've ever experienced. So, like, if I have to stare at the back of someone's head, that is the worst experience I've ever had in my life. So there are numerous ones of those I can think of. But I don't know, man. Like, I had to see Home Alone 2 when I had a migraine headache one time.
Oh, no.
A terrible movie. And I felt sick, and that was terrible when I was a kid. But yeah, I would say any theater that does, and these days, like we've just started to get in Nashville the theaters that have the reclining seats, and they come and they serve you dinner.
Oh, right.
Stuff like that, which I'm all for. That's like pamper me. I mean, give me a massage on my feet at the movie. I would hate for that. So I would say anything that is less than that is the worst thing I've ever experienced these days, which is pretty terrible. I mean, I'm so North American.
Such a first world problem. And, you know, why would you hate Home Alone 2 so much? I mean, our President Trump, okay, he's in the movie.
Oh,
I'm in the movie.
He is in the movie. Oh, that's right.
I'm in there. Okay, I'm in there. Oh. I tell him to move on. Go away, little man. Go away.
It's very forward thinking and hating that movie then. That's crazy. I'm pretty proud of myself for that.
You're a loser. If you don't like me, loser. You're wrong. You're wrong. Wrong.
And Macaulay Culkin is a loser, so yeah. Donald Trump is right again.
So I always like to ask this part because there are some of us who just can't stand certain actors or just can't stand certain directors. Do you have any of those where you're just like, okay, if actor X is in this movie, there's no way that I'm going to watch it?
I think I've told you this before. Judi Dench.
Oh.
Judi Dench. What has she done? Come on. What movie have you ever been in that I've liked? I don't like you. Whatever.
Judi Dench. I've never had so much hatred for Judi Dench.
Hatred for Judi Dench. Jeez, Judi Dench. Give me a break. No, I would, you know, actresses and actors, there's not one that I just would never go see something they're in. I mean, I will say, like, directors that I think are so overrated would be, like, James Cameron.
Oh, yeah.
Titanic. I think my definition of James Cameron is he is just like a dignified Michael Bay. That is all that is. I don't particularly care for his stuff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's kind of the one director that I Avatar 2. Oh, my gosh. That's one too many Avatars. Absolutely. When that's going to come out, I will absolutely not go see that.
I didn't even see Avatar. I mean, it was such a big deal.
I did go. That would actually probably be in my top five worst movie going experiences because I went and saw it in 3D. Uh-huh. Huge mistake. I don't see anything in 3D anymore. Just is stupid. And I didn't enjoy the movie. I don't know. I didn't like it. So that's really my James Cameron and Judi Dench. You're in my. You're in my doghouse Hall of Fame. I don't interview you.
You mentioned something about musicals earlier. Do you like do you go out and find them, or do you just like stumble upon them? Because I'm a little bit of both. I mean, people really are digging into Hamilton. I can't stand Hamilton. I never liked him as a historical person. He was a conniving little jerk. That's just me, but. But since they made this musical about him, it's like he's the greatest person. Oh, Hamilton, he's so wonderful.
Oh, I agree. I throw away every $10 bill I have. I hate him. get out of here. No, musicals, I definitely stumble upon those. Like, I don't go out and look for musicals. I'm not necessarily a theater person, but But, you know, La La Land was the last musical I saw that I loved. I just loved that movie. Yeah. I'm trying to think, like, you know what? We watched Chicago for the Mediocre Movie Club. I love that movie. That was great. So, like, there are some really good and sort of emotionally moving musical movies out there. I don't necessarily think that, like, there. I know kids and I know people who, like, will go see every new thing on Broadway, you know, that they possibly can. My, you know, interesting story. My mom and stepdad got tickets to see Hamilton on Broadway when Lin-Manuel Miranda was the lead, like, years ago. And it was because, like, somehow they had, like, planned a trip to New York 2 years out, and they were like, oh, we should go see a show. And they just, like, went online and they were like, oh, this new show is coming out called Hamilton. Nobody's ever heard of it. And they bought tickets. And it was like, y'all, you could sell those tickets and cover your whole trip to New York while you're there. So, anyway, weird story. But,
oh, my gosh. That's amazing. Well, did they enjoy it, or what did they think of it?
Oh, yeah. My mom is a huge Hamilton fan. I got her, like, a Hamilton adult coloring book for Christmas. Like, nice, and she loved it. So, yeah. Oh, man, they are huge Hamilton fans. I will say I have not heard it, seen it. Mm-hmm. I could not name a song from Hamilton for you. Okay. I don't know. And that's part of – I have this weird thing of being, like, very plugged into pop culture, except when things get really popular and I'm like, ah, screw that. I'm not doing that. So Hamilton falls into that category for me. I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. So I kind of want to go see it just when it, you know, now that it's like a regional touring show, it's coming to a couple places nearby. I'll probably go see it, you know, when it's there, just because I feel like I should. But
right.
Yeah.
I stumble upon them, but when I latch onto one, boy, I like it. Like, this completely historical, inaccurate one is called 1776. And it talks about the making and the signing of the Declaration. It's really cool if you're a history nerd like me. And
I will have to look that up. Yeah.
Yeah. It was made in like 72 or 73, and it came out, you know, for the bicentennial of the country and all that sort of stuff. So I thought it was kind of neat, and I'd still, you know, my parents like to make fun of me for it because I said, you guys got to watch this. You'll love it. And they watched it and go, this is the worst movie I've ever seen in my life. And that's kind of
I will say, when I was a teenager, I got really into, like, rock operas. So, like The Who, you know, Tommy. Yeah. If you grow up in Alabama, there are only three radio stations in the entire state, and one of them plays classic rock music. And so that's – me and my friends grew up on classic rock.
Okay.
And so we all got into, like, classic rock operas when we were, like, 15.
Cool.
Like The Who and the movie The Who. And I feel like Led Zeppelin did, like, a really awful one at some point. So, yeah. Okay. Fun fact.
Do you ever come across any kind of Disney movies? Like, do you remember, like, the controversy over the Little Mermaid and, like, when it first came out on VHS and the cover?
And it was, like, pornographic images or something?
Yeah.
Was that it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
My mom collects all those things.
Oh, I had the Little Mermaid cover stuffed under my bed, you know, so my parents couldn't find it. I do remember that with the Little Mermaid and, like, the bubbles look like penises or something like that.
Right,
With Disney movies, I see most of the Pixar movies when they come out.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if they're – I don't think I've necessarily seen any of the Cars movies, but most of the other ones I've seen. Mm-hmm. And I do think like that they do some really creative, powerful stuff with animation. Otherwise, when it comes to Disney, I don't know. I just grew up probably a little too late to be like a true Disney fanatic. I have friends that go to Disney World 10 times a year, but I don't. You know, I appreciate what they did. I mean, they were certainly pioneers in terms of like just world creation and character creation and things like that. But I don't know. I will see the Pixar movies, but they're not sort of touchstones of my life like they are for other people.
Right. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I mean, there was a time when I would have to see like the newest one, and once like I just lost interest when it came to be around like Pocahontas. Like after Pocahontas, I'm like, I don't really care about it anymore.
Pocahontas. Yeah, don't let me get out of Texas.
But
come on.
You know, I always come back to like Aladdin. Like that's like some sort of a standard bearer.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think when I was a kid, like the Disney movies that meant the most to me. I mean, Aladdin came out when I was probably 12 or 13, and the Robin Williams thing was a big deal. Oh,
he was fantastic in that too.
I mean, they had a run of movies in the late 80s and early 90s that just, you know, you had to see Little Mermaid, Aladdin. I don't know what else. I had the Lion King. Well, yeah, for sure. Actually, yeah. That one came a little. I was talking to somebody else about the Lion King today, and how that was one of the first movies. I have very serious Lion King conversations with people just randomly in my life, but we were talking about how that was one. Yeah, that was one of the first movies that like they remembered there were extra things that went along with it. So like playing cards. And, like all of the imagery stuff that you could like collect and, you know, Disney really started playing around with that in that period of the late 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily always get into that, but,
like I always find myself quoting it. I know, somebody will say, "What song do you have in it?" And I'll go, "I've got the lovely bunch of coconuts." And I'm like, why is that song in my head? But I mean, that's
yeah,
just stuff.
I would ask you that same question. Yeah, that yeah. For sure. I feel very lucky actually in that I did spend a lot of time when I was growing up with like grandparents and parents who exposed me to a lot of the really early Disney stuff, like the 60s stuff and like Jungle Book, original Jungle Book, and like Herbie the car and yeah, all that stuff. So I had that background all growing up. Yeah. So I, you know, I feel like a lot of kids these days these kids don't have that. These
kids. Shake my fist at them.
Get off my lawn.
Well, Lane, I appreciate you being with me on this interview. I've talking with you and it's quite the honor. So I appreciate your time.
Always a pleasure. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Great to catch up with you, man.
Absolutely.
Good talk.
Absolutely. Now we get to plug some Mediocre Movie Club stuff here. We have a Facebook page. Please go check that out. It's Mediocre Movie Club. Go like us. Okay. Mm-hmm. Please rate this podcast of a 5-star if you don't like it, or if you thought it was mediocre, please give us a 5-star anyway.
Yeah, or yeah, just 5 stars. Just 5 stars. Doesn't matter.
That's all that we want here. I mean, we're in the midst of reviewing, I think, some Denzel Washington movies. Right.
Yeah. Oh my gosh! I just watched the Magnificent Seven last night. Oh gosh, that's a terrible movie. Well, just wait for the review, folks.
Oh, I can't wait. you can find that on our website, mediocremovie.club. Follow us on Twitter, mediocremoviecl. We don't have an Instagram. That'd be interesting if we ever did. But Lane, you have any kind of final thoughts for us?
Man, it has been a pleasure to talk with you tonight. And go to mediocremovieclub.whatever the dot is on our .com or .movie or mediocre movie. Just put it in Google. You'll find it. We have some great reviews, and it's a lot of fun to be a part of this. So yes, I appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you again. This show was produced by John Kissel and with help with Shane Settner. and we give much kudos to them for their help. All right, thanks again for joining me tonight, Dwayne. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Take care.